Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about home improvement on the show today. A little bit about keeping rain and melting snow out of your house as well. And our guest back with us once again, Chad Spade. Chad owns Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison, and always great to have him come by. If you have a water problem or maybe you have another home improvement question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Chad Spade, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you, Larry. It's always great to be here.
So what are some of the places, you know, if we're going to look for water seepage, where do we look?
Yeah, well, so the springtime is a great time to get outside on a warm day and give a thorough inspection. And we always start on the roof. You don't necessarily have to go up on your roof, but if you can see the roof from the ground, maybe with a pair of binoculars, it's good to look for distortions in the shingles. Often ice dams, if you have them, can really cause trouble on a roof, and we want to keep an eye on that. The gutters are an important part of a home system to keep water away from the foundation. And so if your gutters have debris in them from the past fall, maybe, snow came a little early and trapped some of that debris in the gutters, and now they're not performing the way they should, it's important to be able to capture that water and then at the bottom of the downspout to take it away from the foundation. So making sure the gutters are working well. A visual inspection of the siding, windows and doors, looking for signs of discoloration or rot. And then, of course, looking in window wells and around the foundation to make sure that the ground has not sunk any along the foundation, that you don't have low spots. So that when the rain falls, the water is again getting away from the house. What we often see this time of year, too, is that because the ground can still be frozen, when we do get one of those early spring rains, the water is most likely to end up right at the foundation if it can get to that point, because the house and the foundation are warmer. So the ground directly around the house is likely to thaw faster than the ground just a foot out from the home. And so that's why a lot of people will see water in their basement in the springtime because, that water has nowhere to go if the ground is frozen and if there is any sort of a crack in the foundation to allow it to come in.
Interesting. Barbara in Appleton has something that relates, I think. Let's go there. Barbara, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. We put an addition on our house about 7 years ago, and we're having a leak that comes through a light fixture in the kitchen. And my husband has tried to caulk some area, and I just really feel like maybe that area of the roof should be taken apart and redone. It's hard to explain. There's like all these angles on the roof.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So is the leak in the addition, or is it in the part of the home that is near where the addition was added?
Yeah, it's near where the addition was at, but okay. It is in the old part.
Yeah, so of course it's hard to know without seeing it, but often what we find is that when additions are built, if the flashing on the house is not done carefully. And if the siding or whatever the material on the exterior of the old home was not removed high enough up to properly flash the roof connection to the wall, then it's not uncommon to see failures at that point. And then once that water gets beyond the boundary of the exterior wall and the roof, it can find its way along a rafter or along a ceiling joist to an opening like a light on a ceiling and then drip out. And so the place that I would look for first would be that flashing point where the roof meets the home. And sometimes we find that the real culprit is that because that addition was added, if the house itself, the wall that was attached to, does not have proper flashing up above where that roof is, it could be that, you know, that pre-existing defect in the way the house was constructed means that the wall above the entire addition will need to be redone because what we'll see sometimes is, you know, that failure in the original construction hasn't caused a problem until now when that addition has been added. And it just, you know, that was the thing that kind of changed that wall and is now causing the water to come in. So it can be complicated sometimes to figure out exactly where that water's coming in, because in the case I'm describing, it sometimes can be coming in around a window or door above the addition and then just getting into that wall, and where the addition was attached to the house, now it's finding a new path and making itself seen, you know, and causing damage.
Hmm. Barbara, does that help?
Thanks. So would your first thought be to take the shingles off and look at the flashing and, you know?
Well, I'd actually be looking at the wall and behind the siding where the roof, just above where the roof meets the house. So I'd be focusing first on that point, particularly given that the water is showing up not in the addition itself, but in the home. I suspect the problem is originating on the exterior wall above the addition.
Okay. Yep.
So,
Barbara,
I hope that helps.
Yeah, does that help, Barbara?
Yeah, and my husband is listening too, so thanks.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot. Another water, here's an email on a homeowner with an Energy Star home, three-story home, had in a driving rainstorm a few weeks ago, had water coming in through a cam light into the living room, and the bathroom was above it, and wondered if this driving rain had somehow created a situation where it was somehow coming through into the house.
That's an interesting one. So, you know, when I hear driving rain and unusual leak, one of the places that I might look would be various vent outlets on the home. So, for example, where a dryer or a bathroom vent comes out of the house. Often that is a vent hood that's about 4 to 5 inches square or slightly rectangular on the side of the home. And if that has if some of the flappers on it have gotten stuck open or have even blown away or it's gotten damaged in some way, a driving rain can push into that and sometimes end up showing a leak in a ceiling like that. It could also be getting into a vent system on the roof if one of these appliances is vented out of the roof. So that's another possibility. And again, it's the driving rain is the key factor here, because you have wind and heavy rain. And if it's getting in places that it would not normally get in, that, you know, we're going to look to those sorts of outlets in the home. It also, though, could just be bad luck combined with a slight oversight during construction. And the particular conditions that cause this leak might never reoccur. And so, you know, leaks can sometimes really be... you know, a head scratcher. Hopefully those are some tips that will help that person to figure out what's causing it.
Let's go to Brad in Lake Geneva next. Brad, hi. Thank you for calling.
So here's an interesting question for you. Does anybody ever use artificial grape flavor, which birds hate, to discourage woodpeckers?
Wow, that's a great question. I've never heard of that. There are many things that I'm aware of that we do on occasions to create decoys and distractions to discourage the woodpeckers. But I'm unaware, and we certainly have not, to my knowledge as a company, ever applied any sort of a flavor to the area. And my concern there is it may discourage the woodpeckers, but maybe it'll attract
something else.
Some other, right, that thinks grapes are delicious.
I'm betting you have cedar siding, Brad.
I do have cedar siding, and artificial grape flavor chemical is used frequently at airports where they have drainage ponds, and they want to discourage waterfowl from being in the water there. It's a commonly used chemical.
Okay.
And it's very benign.
No.
Interesting.
I've never heard of it being used that way on a house, Brad, but I suppose you could give it a try and see if it worked. I don't know. I'm not highly recommending this, but... That's just what I have for you. Thanks for calling. Maybe somebody else has had experience with it and will call in. In the meantime, if you have a question, a home improvement question, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or email us. Email address ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking home improvement with Chad Spate. Comes by every 2 months to talk with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison and Monona. It's great to have him with us today. If you have a question, join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to Terry in Madison next. Hi, Terry.
Hey, how you doing, Larry? This is Terry Schmidt, the gourd girl.
Oh.
Remember me?
Yeah, of course I do, Terry. What's on your mind today?
It's been a long time. Hey, Larry, here's my question. I just bought an old colonial home in Monroe.
Okay.
And I had the inspection done on it, and the inspector said, well, you have roof vents. It's a relatively new roof built in 2011. You have roof vents. No, you have ridge vents, but you also have a roof vent, and you don't need both, and the roof vent is leaking. So I just want to verify if I bring a roofer in and say, inspector said I don't need the roof vent, ridge vent is enough, I want to make sure that's right.
Okay, what do you think, Chad?
Yeah. Well, Terry, thanks for calling in. This is a great question. So typically, when a ridge vent is installed on a home, that system can work very well to ventilate the roof, provided that there are adequate vents down at the bottom of that roof in the eaves of the home. And so that ridge vent is designed to work with air coming in at the bottom and flowing underneath that roof and then going out at the top. And additional older roof vents, which you are describing also being on your roof, actually cause turbulence in the natural flow that we're trying to encourage to ventilate the roof. So the reason typically that we want to do one or the other is so that we're not creating turbulence and we are actually doing a good job of allowing that roof to vent. So you can more than likely discontinue the old roof vents, you know, have the roofer just remove them and patch that space, and that will take care of your leak. And then hopefully the ridge vent and the soffit venting on the eaves will do the job to ventilate the roof. So you should be able to do that. And of course, you're going to be having a roofer come to do these repairs. So just have that conversation with them. And the roofer, a qualified roofer, will understand how that roof vent system is designed, and they'll be able to make sure that if something else should be done in conjunction with this, they can recommend it.
Yeah. Terry, there you go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, let's go to Mark in Wausau next. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Hello. Yes, hi. I own a duplex on the east side of Milwaukee that is old. It dates to 1916. It's uninsulated with balloon framing, and we're trying to decide on a technology for a spray-in insulation among our other energy improvements like new windows and so on. Foam or cellulose? One of the things we're worried about is moving the dew point into the wall cavity. And if that's a problem, right, if the insulation is moisture sensitive, like cellulose, should we be choosing a foam instead? And if it's foam, we're worried about the lifespan of that foam. Does it shrink and then cause air gaps? Or does it off gas and cause health problems?
Sure. Well, these are all great questions, and these are the sorts of questions that we will often discuss with our clients to figure out what is the best approach, you know, for your building. I would say that given the age of the structure, the use of cellulose is arguably often your best bet, because cellulose, properly installed, is moisture tolerant, which is to say that it can take on a little bit of moisture and then expel that moisture, and that will happen naturally. And I'm not talking about having an active leak that's wetting the cellulose constantly. You know, the exterior of the home does need to be in good shape, and I presume that the insulation project would include kind of a touch-up to that exterior just to, you know, to make sure that everything is in good order. But cellulose might be the best choice. As you know, and the installer is going to be very focused on, because it's a balloon frame structure, every place where the floor framing or the ceiling framing is intersecting the exterior wall, something's going to need to be done to prevent the insulation from falling into those cavities and thus falling out of the wall. That's a common failure that we see in a balloon frame structure. So there's some strategies that the insulator can use to essentially block those cavities. And then when they put in their dense pack cellulose, it should fill up the cavities well and should give you many decades of good performance.
Yeah. And Mark, have you considered an energy audit, or did you do one?
Yes, we did have one recently, and we had so many questions that we ran out of time.
Well, and I'm sure you're aware that there are some potential cost savings through government programs now for these kinds of things.
Oh, absolutely. There's current rebate programs that are modest, and with the coming programs with the Inflation Reduction Act, they get substantial.
Yeah, yep, they do indeed.
Planning on staging our improvements while those programs get rolled out.
Mark, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
And yeah, good luck with your project.
Yeah, good luck with the project. Tom in Watertown, we'll go to you. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I was wondering, we're gonna put a steel roof over the house, and two questions. And I was wondering what they recommend, if we tear it off, what do you recommend underneath steel? And if you don't, is it advisable to just tear the shingles down to the rafters and put 2x4s and then put it over the top of the shingles?
Okay, well, so great questions. So typically with any sort of a metal roof, the recommendation would be to remove the old layers of roofing and to put a new and quality underlayment under that. And generally, we would recommend a something like an ice and water shield, because that metal roof is going to have a much longer lifespan, typically, if it's properly maintained, than a traditional three-tab asphalt or fiberglass shingle. And so it's also important to note that a roofing system properly installed is always redundant, which is to say that that metal layer on top, while it's designed to keep out 95% of the water, inevitably there will be places where water gets behind that. And that's why you have that second layer of protection, all of which needs to be properly integrated with flashings. And wherever there are chimneys or pipes coming out of the roof, you know, things have to be properly flashed at those points. And of course, that's typically flashed both at the underlayment level and then integrated with that top layer. So the other thing I'll just say is, if you do leave a layer of shingles on, the thing that you really have to be concerned about is the amount of weight on the roof. And if there's more than one layer, I would say you absolutely have to remove, you know, all but one layer of shingles at a minimum. So hopefully that helps.
Tom, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. And Ron, in Pioneer, Missouri, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Thank you both. My 63-year-old fixer-upper has 280 square feet in the basement, and the other roughly 800 square feet crawl space has 4 to 5 feet clearance. My first radon test was 4.8. And my best friend is a do-it-yourselfer with 40 years experience farming in that county. I would like to use 4-inch corrugated polyethylene tubing that already has slots pre-drilled or pre-sawed all the way along it. And then in the crawl space, I've already got a 100 by 20-foot sheet of clear plastic I would put over the tubing in there, but I would put the tubing around on the floor right against the walls of the basement all the way around except the doorway. It has an old 4 or 6 inch metal gas flue from the old gas furnace that's been replaced. It goes all the way through the roof, a couple feet above the roof. I'd love to install both a solar attic fan and a wind turbine attic vent at the top of that to use renewable energy to get the radon out of the basement. I also want to add whatever, about 10 inches of cellulose in the attic on top of fiberglass. And the existing walls that we've seen have only 1 inch of fiberglass insulation, and it has like tar or asphalt on the side toward the heated space. I want to add 2 inch thick styrofoam, 4 foot by 10 foot sheets in the garage against the house wall, you know, for additional insulation without tearing out either surface of that existing wall. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ron, for the call. And you're doing a lot of good things. A couple of comments that I just want to make. I mean, as far as the radon remediation goes, it's really important that a couple of things happen when you're doing radon remediation for it to be safe and effective. Putting the visqueen out in the crawl space and sealing that well to the exterior walls that are just above the floor is very important. And I heard you say that you were going to be putting a drain tile in there as a way to collect that air. And I get that. It's interesting. I've never heard of that particular approach before. But I don't see anything inherently wrong with it. At the end of the day, you're going to be creating negative pressure underneath the visqueen to pull any of that radon with the air and exhaust it out of the house. And it would similarly apply to the basement space, where typically we would just core into this to the floor. Then again, you would pull air out from under the floor, and you would go around and try to seal any cracks in that floor in the basement to make sure that the system is pulling air from below the floor and not just pulling air out of the basement. So those things need to be done well. And then typically radon systems vent out of the house down at the basement level, and the pipe is actually on the exterior of the house, and or at least the fan that powers it. And I heard you talking about some of the details about, you know, wanting to have maybe a turbine up on the roof. Mm-hmm. My only concern there is that, you know, if you have an electric, you can have a DC-powered motor that's on the outside that's going to be very efficient, very low-power fan, and you can power that with a PV system. That's what I would recommend. But the reason that fan housing needs to be beyond the envelope of the home is that if there's ever a crack in it, you don't want that radon to then be leaking back into the living space in the home. So I'm not quite sure if that is helpful, but it sounds like you've got some great ideas. And as far as the styrofoam goes, again, there's nothing wrong with insulating a wall, adding some insulation. I just want to point out that often the foam materials that we put up, they are vapor barriers, and we just need to make sure that we're not going to be creating any problems with trapping moisture in a wall. But you certainly can potentially use that product the way you described it. So hopefully those are some helpful tips, and good luck with your project.
Yeah, good luck, Ron. Appreciate the call. Chris emailed that they have water coming into the basement, not a lot, but they know the issue could exacerbate. It's next to a neighbor's house, so they don't have enough space to do proper grading, you know, 3 feet out and so forth. What can they do in a situation like that?
Yeah, this is a common problem, particularly in urban areas where houses tend to be close to one another, particularly in the older neighborhoods. And so it starts with talking to the neighbor and seeing if there might be a way to divert the water to the low side of that space in between the two houses so that it's not being dumped right there in between the houses, and then the water has to make its way between the homes out to the low side of the grade. But if you can actually take a drain tile or a downspout and just divert and dump that water out beyond the space in between the homes, that's one solution. Another possibility might be to do some regrading between the homes so that there is a true swale, a low point, at the midpoint between the homes. And again, that swale hopefully is graded towards the low side of the property. And if there isn't really much elevation change, maybe there's a bit of a, a high point in the middle, and you're diverting the water in both directions away from that space in between the homes. But again, allowing there to be a little bit of a low point towards the middle so that water is going away from foundations and then away from that space in between the homes so that the groundwater is being diverted away from the foundations, and hopefully that will help to reduce your problem.
Yeah, sounds good. Ron in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I got a question. I've seen this TV commercial on about spraying a coating on older shingles to lengthen their life, and I just wonder if your guest has any knowledge about that.
Yeah, thanks, Ron, for the call. That's a great question. I've seen these commercials as well, and I'll confess that I am not very familiar with the track record or effectiveness of these approaches. I certainly am open to this as a possible way to extend the life of a asphalt shingle system. It certainly makes sense. A lot of times with those shingles, over time, they lose their granular coating, which is what, protects the whole system and allows those shingles to maintain their integrity, to keep the water out. And just like an asphalt driveway occasionally gets a sealant applied to it, this product, I believe, is functioning in a similar way where it's getting absorbed by those older shingles, and it's kind of reactivating that asphalt core that provides some water repellence and also, of course, like I say, maintains the integrity. So it's possible that it works well, but I just don't know enough about how it's actually performing in the field to be able to recommend it.
There you go, Ron. Thank you for calling. Jane in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi there. So I have a new home that's a year old, and after the really bad rain we had about a week ago, there was water in the basement and about an inch or so, and it cracked in between all of the large rectangle segments. So instead of one flat surface, this was made with segments, and the builder said, well, that was so that cracks would occur there. But my question for you is, then would the plan be next to seal that, and with what material would be best to seal all those cracks?
Okay, so thanks for the call, Jane. So it sounds like we've got two issues here. One is that the slab, when the builder put in the slab, they do typically put it in a way that there will be places that they're trying to encourage the cement to crack. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's hard for a huge uniform basement floor to not be allowed to break in some places. But my question would be, is the water coming up through these cracks, or is the water just coming in other places and these cracks in the floor are a separate issue? That would be one of my questions. It sounds like. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jane, I was going to say, is that the case?
It's darker around the crack, so I'm assuming, and was more in the center, nothing around the periphery of the basement floor. Okay. So I'm assuming that it came up through the cracks.
Okay. So, and let me ask you this, is there a sump pump and some sort of a drain tile in the basement?
Sump pump was working well, but yeah.
Okay, the sump was working and water was still coming up through these cracks.
Correct.
So it sounds like part of what might be going on is that the how old is the home? I didn't catch that.
A little under 1 year.
Oh, my. Okay. Huh. Yeah, I would have some concerns, if the floor was done well when the house was built, there should have been gravel, a crushed stone that was installed along with some insulation and a continuous vapor barrier, typically Visqueen, put down underneath that cement slab. So any water that's getting into that system should be making its way through the stone. And that's one of the reasons the stone is there, is to allow the water to travel over to the drain tile and then get pumped out by the sump system. So it seems odd to me that water would be driving up through those cracks. It sounds like some of the things that are typically done as part of best practice underneath the slab may not have been done. And it's going to be hard to seal those cracks and have it perform long term, given how powerful that water pressure can be when the water table is an issue. So I would talk to the builder about how exactly that was built, and then we would have to go from there.
Yeah. Need to have another conversation there, Jane. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Chad Spate, our guest today, owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your home improvement issues today on the show, our guest today, Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call from Pat in Three Lakes. Pat, what's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a 412-pitch gable roof with asphalt shingles, and I was wondering if I can put metal over the asphalt shingles or if I should take the shingles off first. And what's the average cost of a metal roof per square foot?
All right, some great questions. Thanks, Pat. So, the 412 roof, you can install a metal roof over a 412 pitch, but typically we would recommend that you have a continuous layer of, say, an ice and water shield sublayer under that roof. And again, that I mentioned it to an earlier caller that having something like an ice and water shield, that underlayment is going to last as long as the metal on top of it. One of the dangers we have of covering an old roof with a metal roof is that you're giving up the opportunity to have redundancy that you can count on for the life of that metal roof. So I would discourage you from just going over the old roofing material. I feel like there was another part of the question.
Cost per square foot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am going to I'm hesitant to answer that right now because all I can say is that we've seen a lot of volatility in pricing here over the last few years. Typically, a metal roof is going to cost 2 to 3 times what your typical asphalt shingle roof would cost. But to give you, there's so many variables that impact cost per square foot, I hesitate to give that. But a metal roof is properly installed will be 2 to 3 times an asphalt roof.
There you go, Pat. Thank you for calling. Bill emailed. He wants to fix up his basement. What are some things he should or should not do? The walls are poured concrete, about 1950s. How should he insulate the walls, and what can he use for framing?
Okay, great question. So typically, with a poured concrete foundation, we would install either a sheet material insulation, or something that is not going to be damaged by occasional wetting. To really knock it out of the park, the best thing to do is to install some sort of a dimple board on the walls that will take any water that ever gets into that wall, any sort of crack that forms in a leak, it'll take that water down to the floor, and it will not allow it to get into the wall that you're going to build. And so then if you put up that sort of a dimple board, then you have more options for how you insulate the wall because you will have protected the wall from getting wet. And typically we will frame out those walls with 2x4s because they're not there for structure and you don't need the 6 inches to have the high R value that you need above grade. You know, you can get by with less R value in the lower level. Typically, we'll just use, say, 2 inches of insulation board, getting, say, an R10. And then there's that framing that I mentioned. And that gives you some place to run wiring through that framing if you're going to have outlets and switches in the walls. And then you can go over top of that with drywall or potentially some other material. The other thing that I'll just mention is that when you are putting in a wall below grade up against that cement or concrete foundation wall, you do not install a vapor barrier on the interior side of that wall because, again, there is a risk that water and moisture is going to get into the assembly, and it is true that the natural flow of moisture and air in a home is that it's getting pulled into the basement through those walls and through the floor, and so you don't want to trap that moisture in the wall. You know, if you're going to have a vapor barrier in a basement, ideally it's on the exterior of that wall. And as a second choice, it would be that it's on the interior side of the of that concrete. And then everything else goes to the interior of that vapor barrier. So I think that pretty much covers best practice. Good luck with your project.
Yeah, good luck with that, Bill. John in Mount Horeb, on to you now. Hi, John.
Yes, thank you. My question is about cleaning vinyl siding. We have vinyl siding on our entire house. And on the north side, we're getting some mildew. It's kind of accumulating. Now, I have a pressure washer myself, but I have heard that there are ways that you got to be very careful that you don't get water up into the weep or drain holes on the vinyl siding, or then you get water behind the siding. And then I'm also wondering, is this a do-it-yourself kind of project, or is this something that I should be hiring a professional?
Great questions, John. Thanks for the call. So first off, I would say that whether or not it's a do-it-yourself project really has to do with your comfort being up on ladders and, you know, moving the ladder around a lot. Certainly, it is a project that is probably done most safely by a professional. But if you know, if you're handy with being up on ladders, then it might work out just fine. You can use a pressure washer to clean off the vinyl siding, but you are absolutely correct that the one thing you want to do is to make sure that you're always pointing that spray nozzle in a slightly downward direction so that you're not spraying up into those weep holes that are underneath each one of those layers of the siding profile. You know, and those weep holes are there to allow any moisture that gets behind the wall to weep out any condensation that forms on the backside of the vinyl, for example. So you don't want to be driving a bunch of water in through those weep holes when you're cleaning it. So if you just, you know, maintain some discipline, I mean, that essentially means that you're cleaning from above, that you're not, you know, spraying up on the wall from below, because when you're doing that, there's no way you can avoid pushing that water up through those weep holes. So you want to be on the ladder and spraying directly at the wall or slightly below your current elevation.
There you go, John. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Amelia in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Amelia.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Amelia.
It's your daughter.
Wow, this is a first.
I am, as you know, a homeowner in Madison, and my house has a fuel oil furnace. So I've been really curious about heat pumps and what you would advise about living in Wisconsin and knowing that it gets very cold, but wanting to be, seeing as I was raised by you, looking for an electrical option for my home.
Sure, sure. Well, thanks for the call, Amelia. You do have an old oil furnace, and oil furnaces are, you know, you've got a tank, and it certainly is a less efficient furnace than a lot of the modern furnaces that are out there. For many years, we used to recommend natural gas furnaces as the cleanest approach, given all the variables, but as you're alluding to, we've reached the point where now it seems that with our ability to use renewable energy to produce more and more of our electricity, it makes sense for us to look at heat pumps, which have also come a long way in allowing us to effectively heat our buildings, even when the temperature has dropped as low as, say, 5 degrees or even right around zero. Heat pumps are able to do their magic and actually produce more power, more heat energy than the electricity that we're putting into them. So you are an excellent candidate for looking at upgrading your system to a heat pump. For some people that have natural gas furnaces, there are actually heat pump retrofits that can be done that will allow you to still use your old natural gas furnace to use the natural gas when it's needed in particularly cold spells that we sometimes get in the winter months. But most of the time, the heat pump will be able to provide the necessary heat. There might be an opportunity to install such a system in conjunction with an oil furnace. But every, you know, that will depend on your furnace, and I'm not sure if that's a possibility at this point with the various technologies that are out there.
So there you go, Amelia. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Chad Spade, our guest today, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison and Monona. Great to have him with us. And he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. So we'll take now a look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Chad. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home remodeling on the show today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network, and pleased to have back Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build. So, questions on home improvement, give us a call. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Tim and Ladysmith's been waiting a bit. Let's go there. Hi, Tim.
Hello to you both. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess the question I have today is about steel roofs.
Okay.
So a lot of the people I've seen that have had steel roofs installed, usually they have the 90-degree standoffs put into those steel roofs at usually just above the eave line. The challenge here, obviously, in northern Minnesota is sometimes with winter snowfalls early and late is that they're pretty wet and that they have a tendency to accumulate even on a steel roof. So the challenge I have is that with those standoffs, they will break off that width of that snow sheet so it won't come down all one fall. But they've been falling down so much they've been ripping off steel roofs. So I don't know if there's a perspective to put, when you put a steel roof on, to put heat tape on the bottom of a steel roof, which seems sometimes counterintuitive, but a way to keep that ice sheet from forming so thick and so heavy without raking that it doesn't come down and rip that whole line of gutter off.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, Tim. Thanks for the call. So, you know, like any system, there are things we do to try to mitigate against the typical nuisances or issues, and as you know, with a metal roof, we do have the danger of large ice sheets or just snow sheets kind of coming off and kind of creating a little avalanche, and it can kill someone if you're particularly unlucky. It could certainly hurt you. I would not typically advocate for using heat tape to, you know, be constantly melting things at the bottom. But it could be that the particular location of a building, its orientation to prevailing winds and whatnot, that might be an appropriate solution or strategy in certain situations. I think that when something like this is happening and a roof is being, you know, torn off a building potentially by it, then either there was extraordinarily unusual weather or something wasn't installed properly when the roof was put on. So I think that a lot of the systems that are out there that are used to try to deal with this tend to be effective, and sometimes a heat tape is a kind of solution of last resort to deal with problems with ice damming and snow accumulation where it's causing a safety hazard.
Hmm. There you go, Tim. Thank you for calling. Christina in Glenwood, will you go to you now? Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. Our HVAC system is 25 years old. We live out in the country, so we currently heat with LP and we cool with electric. We plan to replace it this summer. So what would you recommend?
Yes. So great question, Christina. The challenge with LP is that the cost of it, of course, can be very volatile, and you've got to fill up that tank whenever it's running low, and that can be an issue. If you have reliable electrical power, now would be a good time to look at going to an entirely electric system with a heat pump. If that LP system is still functioning, depending on how everything is currently installed and designed, you may have an opportunity to allow that system to stay in the home and be a backup for particularly cold times in the year when a heat pump would not necessarily be able to provide you with enough heat. Definitely talk to qualified heating and air conditioning contractors to get some ideas and to get some proposals, but that's where I would lean towards. If there's a way to utilize your existing system as the backup and have a new, modern, efficient heat pump installed to take care of both your heating and air conditioning needs, that would be, I think, the best approach.
Yeah, there you go, Christina. Thank you. Good luck. Jake in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hi, thanks for having me. My question's regarding energy efficiency and basements. Just recently, I got my inspector to approve off on my plan, and he said for future requests and energy saving when regarding building out basements and living spaces to leave an air gap between your stud wall and your vapor barrier. Any thoughts on that, and is that becoming a trend? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I take it that the air gap is being referred to if there's a vapor barrier up against your foundation wall, because typically, and in fact, almost always, the code prohibits putting a vapor barrier on the interior side of the wall assembly. Typically in a home up above grade, the vapor barrier is installed just behind the drywall. But in a basement, we typically don't install a vapor barrier because we want the moisture to be able to get out. So if there is that vapor barrier being installed, it would be right up against the wall prior to any framing or insulating. And maybe he's referring to allowing some space between that vapor barrier and the wall so that if there is a leak, it can make its way down to the floor and then be dealt with at the floor level. And it prevents that water from getting into the wall assembly. I've referred previously to a dimple board product that we use, which is allowing that air space to be there so that water and air can move up against that concrete wall and allow the normal physics of a home to take place without damaging your interior wall system. So I suspect that's what he's referring to, but hopefully that helps.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Jeff in Grand Marsh, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, good afternoon. I just read an article about double wall construction from an outfit down in South Carolina that claims they've built homes in Florida and up in Canada and they're saying they eliminate the need for heating or air conditioning. I'm just curious if you've heard anything about this. The company says they've been in business about 30 years.
Sure. Well, so I am familiar with the movement, and it is, I would say, a trend to build homes that are so tight and efficient that they don't really require much in the way of a cooling or heating system. There is a movement that's out of Germany that's referred to as passive house, which we've had as a topic on this show a couple of times in the past.
Yeah.
And it delivers a similar product where it's a home that has practically zero air leakage, but it has ventilation systems that are both there to provide any necessary supplemental heat or air conditioning, which again tends to be a very low demand for that or a low need for that. But then critically, the important part of a home like this is to have a ventilation system designed to bring in fresh air in a way that is energy efficient. So, you know, you're not just going to open the window in the winter or in the summer, because then you defeat the purpose of having this wonderfully insulated environment. But none of us can survive in a sealed box or a sealed bottle. We need fresh air. We need air exchange to provide that fresh air. And so there are mechanical systems called ERVs or HRVs. It stands for heat recovery ventilator or energy recovery ventilator. The difference between them is that one of them actually helps to maintain the humidity in the home, and the other one doesn't really deal with humidity. It's just transferring air and trying to conserve heat. It's not recapturing humidity. But these are the systems that you're going to need if you have a house that's built like this house that you've encountered down in South Carolina. The last thing I'll say is that a double wall system has been a longstanding strategy to create a high efficiency home. And what's really going on in this system, for the benefit of our listeners, it's essentially you've got an exterior framed wall and then you have an interior framed wall. And there might be some strapping in between the two there for structural integrity, but they're essentially independent. And what that does is that eliminates the thermal bridging that typically happens in a home. Every place that there is a stud in the wall or a roof rafter, heat is being transferred from inside to outside or vice versa, depending on the season. And that's where we get a lot of heat loss. And it's also where the insulation itself is not there to buffer that heat loss. So when you have a double wall, the insulation can actually be continuous in between the two wall systems. And that's why they're so high performance.
Jeff, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's move to Dave in Eau Claire next. Dave, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I got a house that's a ranch house built in the 1980s. The sheathing underneath the siding is 1-inch foam, and I was wondering if it was bad practice. It needs siding right now. It's got masonite on it. Anyway, I was thinking about putting vinyl siding with the foam insulation behind the panels. Anyway, I was wondering if it was bad practice to put vinyl siding over a house with 1-inch foam sheathing, and as much as it probably doesn't have a lot of, maybe not the same strength that plywood or Blandex might have.
Sure, sure. Now, this is a great question. Thanks for your call, Dave. So you are correct that, you know, there are some reasons to be concerned about having you know, vinyl siding, which, it, you know, if you throw a baseball at it or something, it's going to often break. And if behind that is foam board, you know, it's possible that, you know, something can blow right into the side of a house more easily than it would do if there were your typical plywood sheathing on the structure. That said, as a practical matter, there's nothing wrong typically with a home having the 1-inch foam board on it, primarily as the sheathing. Now, there are other things that the builder should have done and likely did to properly brace the home to keep it from, you know, swaying from side to side. In other words, there are things that plywood does structurally that you don't get when you put the foam board up on the house. So I'm not sure that you need to apply plywood over the foam board, though if you've seen issues where the house seems to be shifting, that might be something to consider. The one thing, though, that I would definitely recommend that you do when the house is re-sided is that a properly installed rain barrier be attached to the house and integrated with the flashings prior to, or, you know, as a first step behind that new vinyl siding or whatever siding gets put up. Because a lot of times houses that were built in the 80s did not have a proper rain barrier put on them. Back before the 80s, typically the only material that was used was tar paper, which is also an underlayment for roofing systems. It was also put up under the typical home that would have brick or cedar siding on it. And that tar paper is an excellent water barrier. But nowadays we have higher tech systems. Tyvek is one that many people know, but there are other systems out there. And that is going to keep the water from driving in between the seams on that foam board and getting into the house and causing damage. And so I would strongly recommend that some sort of wrap be installed.
Dave,
good. That's helped.
Yeah, Dave, good luck. Appreciate that call. Patricia in Baraboo, on to you now. Hi, Patricia. What is on your mind?
Hi. So we currently own and live in an 1896 house, but we have 1 acre of land in the country with a workshop on it already. And we've gone back and forth with whether we should build a small energy efficient house. And one possibility is ICF forms. And we wanted to know your opinion of that. And if you know a builder in the area that knows what they're doing in terms of that, or if that is not possible, then what about ZIP forms on a conventional house? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Patricia. The, you know, ICF homes are an interesting approach. And I think that if you can find a builder that can utilize that technology, that has experience and a good track record, it's certainly one way to go. Essentially, you know, it's an insulated concrete form. You're essentially building the walls of the structure, which are typically just below grade or near grade, and you're taking that all the way up to the roof line. And it's a type of assembly that we utilize many times for our foundations because it reduces the amount of concrete that has to be used, and it integrates insulation onto both sides of that concrete to make for a very efficient and both resource efficient structure and energy efficient structure. So I think it's an excellent type of building technology, but you're definitely going to want to find someone that has a track record. And I would recommend talking to maybe the local builders association. I'd utilize some of the trade groups that specialize more in high efficiency homes. I would recommend using the Focus on Energy website to reach out through that network to find builders that specialize in high efficiency structures, because those are also likely to be the folks that are in part involved in the ICF technology. So yeah. Good luck with your project.
Yeah, good luck, Patricia. Lynn in Coon Valley, do you have a quick question for us?
Yes. We recently had our church infrared pictures taken of our church, and we have a steeple with a bell in it and a rope running down to the main floor, a hole in the ceiling, in which we pull every Sunday to ring the bell. Well, that's a straight shot of air going right up to the chimney, and the chimney has louvers in it, so there's, the sound can come out. So it's kind of open to the weather. So what's a creative way to insulate that or protect it so that's not a shoot of air right from our main building?
Yeah,
that's a great question, and it certainly presents a challenge. I think that the best approach might be to devise some sort of a hatch or a panel near the floor of that bell tower that has essentially a sleeve for the rope, and then which seals all the rest of that area, so that essentially only the rope can basically go through an area, which you're going to have some air leakage where that rope connection is, I would think. But if you can thread that rope through some sort of a conduit, like a PVC sleeve, and then have an insulated panel up near the ceiling of the church structure there, near the lid of the building, I think that might help reduce the air leakage you're getting and still allow the whole system to operate as planned. That's a first time, Larry, that we've gotten a church steeple question. That's great.
Great. Lynn, thank you so much for calling. Good luck with that. Appreciate your call. And Chad, good. Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to have you back, and we'll look forward to another visit from you. Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, Larry. It's always a pleasure. Great callers today.
Yeah, there were. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. And by way of full disclosure, we should mention Chad's Design Build is one of WPR's many business sponsors. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk, and Neil DeBole is back to talk about his new book and answer your questions about native gardening. That's tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.